You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and we are here with a very special guest, Cat Moss. Not Kate Moss, Cat Moss. And I'm telling you people, if I'm talking about punk rock, I'm taking Cat Moss over Kate Moss every day of the week because Cat's in the band Scowl. And Scowl is an awesome band, and they've got a real cool new record coming out next week, next Friday. My wife heard it. It's great. And listen, people, it's nasty, it's fast, but it's complex, and it's got artful movements to it, and I dig it a lot. So let's play the first track off that, Bloodhound. The listeners won't realize this, but I was talking to Kat for about 3 minutes, and I forgot to hit recording. So Kat and I are going to walk through the motions for the next 3 minutes or so, and then we'll get into the real interview. So Kat, you, unlike maybe some other interviews, you get two cracks to answer this question. So here we go. Here's the question. Kat, a lot of bands, they have a lot of hype around the demo. Scowl's got a lot of hype around the first demo, and I love the first demo. But I feel as though the album goes above and beyond the demo. The band's growing. And I think a cool thing is that sometimes when bands have a lot of hype around the demo, they just do the demo again, and it's kind of flat, and it kind of falls off. Whereas you guys have taken the demo, taken the magic of the demo, and have gone beyond that, particularly with the song Seeds to Grow, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But Kat, was that a tactical decision, or are you guys just growing naturally? What's the mindset? What's the battle plans with Scowl?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I'd say it's more leaning on the side of growth, just considering the fact that it's the first band I've ever done vocals in or ever played in. And Malachi, who plays guitar and writes kind of the songs, it's the first band he's played guitar in. So we just have grown as musicians with the maturity of the band and made a really intense effort to write a record that showed growth and also just was a heavy hitter. We really wanted to nail that. So
how long does it take you guys to write it? You guys like it's sometimes like a metal band will take like 5 years to write an album, and it'll be like 25. It's like, what took you so long? And then like a punk band will do like an album in like 3 weeks. Like the Slits, 3 weeks, bam, it's the greatest thing ever. You know what I mean? But how long do you guys belabor on a track? Is it like finally honed, or is it that spark and you capture it and that's it?
It was pretty quick when we recorded or when we wrote our record. It was about, I'd have to say, like maybe the first month or two of quarantine when the pandemic originally hit back in 2020. And we just were on it every day practicing writing. And then when it came down to me writing lyrics, I kind of really just sat down for a week and gnawed at it. And I tend to procrastinate with my lyrics, so getting it all done at once helps for me. And then I'll pull a little bit of inspiration from stuff I've done in the past or poetry I've written, but it was pretty quick. We still come up with new material sometimes, and we'll just kind of save it. But it's really off the fly.
Speaking of, I love how direct your lyrics are. Sometimes people are very artful and mysterious, like, you know, the rain is falling down on the statues of my mind, but you'll just be like, I hate you, don't talk to me. You know what I mean? I love how direct your lyrics are. I do sense a lot of agony in these lyrics, you know, like, don't talk to me, I'm feeling pressure. How are you feeling right now? I mean, are you feeling bummed out all the time like Ian Curtis, or is this just one aspect of you? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I mean, I get frustration from daily life just like anyone else often, but for the most part, I'm a pretty happy person. I'd like to say, I mean, when I end up alone, I've got my own stuff that hits me on a regular basis that I deal with. But besides that, when I'm around my people, when I'm playing music, for the most part, I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky individual. But I get pretty sad sometimes.
You bring up a great point, and there's a lot of ways you can take this, and you don't have to get specific.
But yeah.
With regards to things that bum you out and annoy you, do you feel as though you have exceptional issues? That like let's say you've got a brother in jail and your mom hates you and dad's nowhere around. Like do you have exceptional issues, or do you have day-to-day issues like most of us have?
I'd say I have pretty day-to-day issues. I think
right.
I'm past the point in my life where the things that I'm facing are pretty exceptional. That stuff is pretty far behind me now, and I'm really grateful and lucky to say that I have the ability to heal, and I'm in the process of healing from those things.
So that brings up the issue, and we're getting kind of cosmic here, but we'll get to the nuts and bolts in a minute. But like people might say, well, how dare you complain about being depressed or whatever, or how dare you complain, you know, just cause you're having trouble paying rent. You know, there's people with cancer, that kind of, you know what I mean? But on the other hand, I would take the issue that it's all a sense of perspective. Yes, there are worse people out there, but unless you acknowledge that you are feeling bummed out, then it just builds up inside you and explodes. That's my perspective. What's your perspective? Does a person have the right to complain about the day-to-day annoyances? That's the question.
You know what? I think so. I think, to be honest, at the end of the day, if you don't want to hear people complain, then you can put people around you who don't complain. But complaining never hurt anyone. And if someone wants to focus on being unhappy or focus on what's making them unhappy, then so be it. It's not hurting anyone. I think that there's lots of perspective that's really important for your happiness, and it's important to be grateful for what you have. But you can also, you're allowed to be upset and you're allowed to be sad and valid in the feelings of anguish with what you might be facing on a day to day and what might be normally challenging for you as an individual.
The flower, an ancient symbol, older than the ancient Egyptian empire, older than Babylon. A symbol of growth, a symbol of beauty, a symbol of rebirth, a symbol of death. What does the flower represent to you? Because we see the flower as a recurring theme throughout your art, from the first demo tape in the O in the Scowl to the new album, How Flowers Grow, with a flower right on the cover. What does the flower represent to you? And are you a horticulturist or botanist? Like, how into flowers are you?
I love flowers. I just think they're great. They're adorable. They make me happy. They make me smile. And I like nature, and I think I see a lot of my own joy and happiness in that. And I think on a larger scale, the meaning of the flower to me is just, it holds value, not value, but it holds meaning to what my creative life force is. And it also holds meaning to me personally with my life and how I've had to kind of strip down and die a couple times in order to really grow. And I think I never thought of it on that much, on that deep of a level till more recently.
There's a lyric on the album where I'm paraphrasing here, where you say, like, I think it might be the last song, where you say, I look back at what I used to be or whatever, and I don't even recognize that person or something. Is that you, or are you speaking as a character?
I'm definitely speaking to myself in that song.
Well, how have you changed? Like, what's really changed?
Oh, man. I think that at the time that I wrote that song, I was experiencing like an immense amount of self-realization and immense amount of, you know, self-destruction and recreation within my reality and my truth. And I know those are really big words and it's hard to understand, but basically there was a lot of stuff I was telling myself at the time of my life that I believed fully that really wasn't true for me anymore or true for me at all. And that song is writing about that experience of recognizing that I'm not who I thought I was, and I don't like who I am right now, and I need to change.
Well, I mean, did you think like you were like a business person? You're like, no, I'm really an artist, or in what context, you know?
The context of how I viewed myself and my place in my relationships mainly, and my friendships. I had experienced a lot of pain and hardship that I always thought I was taking the right responsibility over, but I truly wasn't. And that was kind of a polarizing moment at the time of writing those lyrics and writing that record, that I realized like I need to change something much bigger than I originally thought. So a lot of it was really inward.
This was kind of an argument we had on the Punk News podcast. I guess not an argument, but a discussion on the Punk News podcast, yeah, like 2 or 3 weeks ago. We were talking about, the setup was really stupid, but I'm going to explain it to you anyways. So we were talking about how this guy, I shouldn't even go into this, but I will, because it's so dumb. I can't underscore how dumb this is, but I'm going to explain it anyways. This guy is married to a woman, and his dad passed away, and his dad was Polish, and he loved being Polish. And every year they would have like a Polish dinner where everyone dressed up in traditional Polish clothes and goes, right? And the wife doesn't want to wear the Polish clothes because she would feel silly. So he says, that's fine, you don't have to wear the Polish clothes, just go normally, right? And she says, well, I'll feel silly because I'm not dressed in Polish clothes and everyone else is. And so one of the people on Punk News podcast says, well, no one should be made to feel uncomfortable. And I maybe I'm wrong, but I disagree. I think feeling uncomfortable is a necessary part of life, and that's what makes you grow. I've felt uncomfortable a lot of times in my life, and it's made me tougher and wiser and smarter. Is discomfort important? I'm going to get back to the nuts and bolts questions. Yeah. These are very, very out there questions. So we'll get back to the specifics, but let's answer this one last cosmic question, then we'll talk specifics.
I think being uncomfortable is completely necessary for growth and for having a relationship with yourself. I think in order to be a better person, you have to go through a lot of shit, and shit is not comfortable, or a lot of bad stuff, you know, maybe not bad, but challenging experiences, you know?
Well said. Let's talk about Santa Cruz. I used to live in Santa Clara, and I loved going up to Santa Cruz on Friday or Saturday, going to the Catalyst Club, going to Moe's Alley. Have you ever been to Moe's Alley, the greatest venue in the world?
You know what's crazy about that is I've never been inside Moe's Alley, but my best friend's dad, who also lives in Santa Cruz, and a few of my old coworkers, when I used to work at a Trader Joe's in Santa Cruz, they actually were the original owners and the people that started Moe's Alley. And they would always tell me about all the glory days of way back when they started Moe's, and about all the crazy stories of all the crazy stuff they'd get up to. But I have actually never been inside it.
How about Streetlight Records?
Oh, I love Streetlight. I go quite often.
Go ahead. I love Streetlight Records, Streetlight San Jose, Streetlight Santa Cruz. What's the coolest thing you've gotten at Streetlight? Cool thing about Streetlight Santa Cruz is they get some crazy stuff there sometimes. And just it's like, who brought this in? So what's the coolest thing you ever got? What's something cool you got at Streetlight Santa Cruz?
I have to say my most prized record right now is an original pressing of Pavements Bright in the Corners that I got at Streetlight in Santa Cruz. That one I'm really, really excited about.
You collect records?
I like to. I'm a little bit, I focus more on tapes in the past year or two, just because they're a little bit more affordable to collect. But I do like to get my hands on some records sometimes. So
what are some of the crown jewels in the collection aside from Pavement? 2 or 3? Or tapes. I like tapes too.
Oh, I love tapes. Okay. So I have the Pavement Bright in the Corners record. I have an original, I think it's Hey Jude and Revolution. It's the Beatles. It's a 7-inch. It's a German pressing that my mom gave me. Grew up in Germany. So that's like really cool. It's like really old, way old original. And then I have, I can't remember off the top of my head. Tape wise, I have a Blind Melon tape that I love to death. So those are kind of my big ones right now.
You mentioned the Beatles. You're a big Beatles fan, right?
I love the Beatles.
I love the Beatles, but I'm mad at Paul right now, taking shots at Mick and the Boys. What is the deal? Mick and the Boys never take shots at the Beatles, but it always Paul's. What's Paul's deal? Like, Paul's my favorite Beatle, but what's his deal?
I don't know. I think he's the one that he had the most, or he has some ego, I'd have to say. I mean, he's an incredible artist, but yeah, he's got some ego. It's always him. My favorite Beatle's Ringo, so I don't have too much to speak on. He minds his P's and Q's.
You know, Ringo is rarely chosen as people's most favorite Beatle, an excellent Beatle. What is it about Ringo? I actually love Ringo's album. It's like Smell the Roses, I think it's called.
Yeah.
I love that album so much. I got the CD version that's got like bonus tracks on it. Ringo, why is Ringo the dude?
As a kid, when I was really young, and that was the first band I'd ever gotten into and gotten to know like the members and watched the movies and read the books and just like really immersed myself in, it was always Ringo since day one. And I think because I always was like into the underdog, I liked the songs that he did sing on and help write were really the wackiest ones. And I really like his drumming. It's to the point, you know? He always just seemed like the most kind of out there Beatle to me. So I loved him for that.
You think Ringo's angry? Sometimes like when he's like, peace and love, I feel like he's very angry.
He might have something deep down, you know, that he's kind of pushing down. But I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
I don't know how Santa Cruz is now because I haven't been there in about 6 years. But when I was there, Santa Cruz was this weird town because there's tourists there, but there's legit gangbangers there. And there's also, like, at the time, there was, like, a black tar heroin, like in certain areas for some reason. Like, how – I feel as though Scouts are very Santa Cruz hardcore band because it's raw, ragged, nasty. And it's like, don't get too close to me, I'll knife you. Like, that's Scout to me. So how has Santa Cruz informed the band? Or maybe it hasn't, you know?
You know – Santa Cruz is such an interesting place. It's still pretty similar. It's still kind of got this like this exterior of being like a really fun tourist town and, you know, come hang out, come to the boardwalk. But it's also got a lot of pretty gnarly stuff going on, you know, on the dark side. And I feel like Scowl is influenced by that heavily just because we've all spent a lot of time in Santa Cruz, whether or not we live in Santa Cruz anymore. Me and Malachi live in Santa Cruz, but Cole, who drums, and Bailey, who plays bass, they don't live in Santa Cruz. Cole used to, Bailey used to work here. So everyone spent a lot of time here. And it really is one of those places you get to where you're going, you do your thing, and you stay out of people's ways because you're either going to get in somebody's way who you're going to one way or another get in someone's way who you don't want to talk to, whether that person be, you know, some white lady at the grocery store or someone who's on a sick one, you know?
Well said. You are younger than I am, but you weren't happy. You or no one in the band happened to be at the MDC riot at the bowling alley like 8 or 9 years ago, were you?
No, I wish. That'd be crazy.
So I went and it was MDC and the band they did the split record with. I can't remember the name. Anyways, so Dave, there was a cop there, and Dave Dichter like keeps saying like, look at the cop, and like he's like making fun of them, but he's being kind of silly. But the cops got like really mad and they shut the show down and they like chained the door shut, and so people are like running out. And I'm like, well, I'm too old to get arrested in this bullshit. So I'm like going out. And like this cop grabs my shirt and I just bolted off and ran through the arcade to get away.
Wow.
You have a shirt that says, I hate every cop in this town.
Oh, yeah.
So here's the question. You know, Penny Rimbaud has a very interesting opinion. In punk rock, you know, like you know, that band ACXDC with Sergio.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they hate cops. MDC hates cops. Penny Rimbaud, the founder of anarcho-punk, or one of the founders, he had a very unique opinion. He said, you know, police aren't really that bad. They're just doing what they think they should be doing. They're misinformed, but they're not bad, which blew my mind because most punk rockers now say all cops are bad. What's your perspective? And if you don't want to answer, that's a very loaded question. Feel free to not answer. I really respect Penny. Like Penny is such a hippie. Like, he's such a hippie. So his everybody's good. Some people just don't. That's the Penny Rimbaud, you know. What's your position?
You know, I definitely take up a lot of the classic views of like, well, I hate cops. I don't like what they stand for. I can understand that there's a lot of nuances, though, involved. There's people I've met in my life and in my younger life who were cops. And as people, were straight up people. But I, as a whole, as a group of people, as a gang, and what it stands for in this country at this point, I don't like cops. I avoid
people. Fair enough. Fair enough. Just a couple last questions. Seize the Grow. Listen, people, we're going to play it at the end of the show. But Seize the Grow is, I don't think it's the best song on the album because the whole album is great. But it's a diversion, and it is a masterful diversion. Let's talk about Seize the Grow. Why the diversion, and what's the song about?
You know, it wasn't a planned thing for me to do, you know, to sing on the record. It was planned to have an instrumental with a sax and to kind of throw people for a loop and do something a little different, test ourselves as musicians. When it came to recording, we were all considering me laying down some vocals on it, and it ended up happening, and it was a really good experience. It was a little bit scary, but the song is about, it's a bit of a reprise, because I'm reusing some of my lyrics from our title track, which is How Flowers Grow. And so the song is kind of calling to that, the meaning of the title track. And that is just not really knowing what to do with yourself and who you are anymore, and stripping down who you are and growing as a person. It's pretty, pretty simple metaphor.
What I like about Cat's lyrics is that, I mean, like there's a lot of different, you could do Bob Dylan lyrics where Bob Dylan is like the thin man with the pencil on it. It's like, what the hell are you talking about, Bob? You know, or you could do like Nick Blinker from Rudimentary Peni, where he says, like, I want to go to sleep and never wake up. And that's the lyric. And you're like, oh, it's like, I love how Cat like approaches that, like very direct, very punchy. Was that a conscious decision, or is that just what sprung out of you?
You know, I always have been attracted to very literal music. And literal lyrics and music. I can appreciate a good metaphor. I can appreciate wonderful poetic writing. And I like to do poetry myself. But I think when it comes to writing punk music, for me personally, something that's really straight to the point and literal is always going to be the catchiest, in my opinion, and the most resonating with the energy that follows, you know, and it's not too confusing. I'm a really simple person. When it comes to writing, if I know I'm writing for hardcore, like writing a punk song, if my lyrics are just straight to the point and catchy and punchy, that's the point I'm trying to make. That's the win for me.
Second to last question, Ceremony, fact or fiction, big fan or not?
Huge fan.
So Ceremony uses the flowers, and I think Ceremony kind of borrowed it from New Order, because Ceremony's a big fan of New Order. We've got the flower punk connection yet again, you know.
Yeah.
What's the importance of Ceremony? I love Ceremony.
I mean, I love Ceremony so much. That's a band that was really, really important to me when I first got into hardcore. And I'd say influence-wise is like, definitely, we take influence from Ceremony just in the sense of how they've gone about their writing, their journey, writing punk music and going into these other aspects and pulling from different genres and not really being afraid about it and being unapologetic about it. That's a huge inspiration to me. I'd have to say I didn't do it on purpose, but I definitely love Ceremony. And when I first started to do vocals, everyone kind of was like, oh, you sound a little like Ross or something. And that was a huge deal to me. So I kind of was like, okay, cool. This is what I want. This raw energy, this like intense, grovelly thing, you know?
Well said. Second last question is, one of the very cool things about, well, for a while, the stereotype of hardcore, and I would actually argue that there's two hardcores. There's hardcore punk, which I would say Ceremony is, and hardcore as in New York hardcore, which I would say, like, you know, for a while, hardcore was kind of, I'm big, I'm bad, I'm tough. And not a whole lot of deeper thought, frankly. I think we're in sort of a silver age of hardcore, if you will, where we have a lot of art in hardcore, a lot of deeper thought. I think Scal is excelling among almost all the contemporaries with regards to creativity and intelligence and thoughtfulness, but it's still extremely primal, which is what I love about it. I guess That's not really a question, but just a compliment. So here's the question. What's next with Scal? I mean, are we going to, we got to, I'm not going to ask that question because we got the new album coming out. That's not a fair question. Let me ask you a different question then. How proud of you are, Scal? Are you guys doing what you should be doing, or are you not at the top of the mountain yet? You know what I mean?
I am immensely proud, but the sky is the limit, if that makes sense. I'm starting to really actually give myself a little bit of credit for it. I'm so in love with it and so like passionate about it. But for the first time really recently, I had the experience of feeling like I actually deserve this. Like some of the good reactions. I really like actually soaked it in for a moment. And that was insane to me because I had never felt that way about it yet. And I was always really insecure and really afraid of what, people might be thinking of it. But more so recently, I've gotten a little bit more stronger on my feet, grown my legs a little bit, and just been like, you know what? We're doing pretty good. I'm proud of myself. You know, I did that. But the sky is the limit. Like I set a lot of goals for myself and with Scal, and I have a couple that are like, I'm probably never going to reach these goals. They're pretty out of the world, but you know what? I believe it's possible. And so that's the number one drive behind it. So I'm very proud, but there's millions more things I want to do.
Well said. Anything else you want the listeners to know about the new album coming out on next Friday? So I think this is probably going to run tomorrow. So next week, the new album will be out, How Flowers Grow. It's a real cool record. I've heard of. People should definitely check it out. You can get it. It's all over the internet, like different websites. You can get different colors. They also do a CD version, which I'm psyched about because I love hardcore on CD. Listen, people, hardcore record of the year. Scal's a real contender. Definitely check it out. Anything else you want the people to know about or check out or anything?
I just want to say a big thank you. And thanks to anyone who goes out of their way to check it out or pre-ordered anything or sees it at a record store and doesn't know what to think and grabs it. I hope you guys like it and resonate with it.
I also want to mention, because this is actually going to go live tomorrow, Scal is doing a rare East Coast appearance in December, albeit the Philly show. I think there's a Brooklyn show and like a Baltimore show, right?
Yes.
Do you know what days those are?
I think it's December.
Well, listen, people can Google it. They can find it, but stay sharp. Scal on the East Coast, December. Do not miss it. I am psyched. Let's play a song. Let's play Seeds to Grow, which is one of the cooler tracks on the record. And Kat, thanks again. It's great talking to you.
Thank you.